Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. From the studios of KUOM Radio K at the University of Minnesota, this is Culture Q, the arts show that rocks. This week on Culture Q, the vicinity of obscenity.
If you use the word in the feminine, which can also mean a really cute girl, it can also mean the female genitalia.
Unbeknownst to me, it was a pole dance fitness class, and I was very intimidated, and I almost left.
Because I'm behind glass, like, and they're kind of exposed. They only have their doors between them and the rest of the store. Like, they're in the more vulnerable position, and I'm more in control.
Good evening. I'm your host, Noel Clark. Obscene, as defined by Merriam-Webster, is anything that is disgusting to the senses or that is deemed to have no morality or value. But what people and societies consider to be obscene also changes over time. In the 1970s, the United States Supreme Court established a three-tiered test to determine if something was obscene. This was based on state laws, the prevailing ideals of the contemporary community, and the presence of artistic, political, or scientific value. So tonight on our show, we take a look at stories of modern life that toe these lines. We'll hear about a little dirty dancing for the sake of fitness, dispel some myths about workers in the sex industry, and talk circles around dirty words in Italian. Plus, we'll introduce our new music segment, Soundscope, with a look at some, well, let's call them love songs. All this and more, right here on Culture Q. After graduating with a degree in business from St. Kate's University, Catherine Fosler worked in church administration for 11 years before the Great Recession took her career down a different path. Producer Markita Fornoff has this story.
It was as if the universe opened up, pointed at a finger at me and said, Catherine, you're going to teach women how to do this. And I remember looking up at the universe and saying, I don't want to find someone else.
Catherine Fosler is talking about becoming a pole dance instructor. For Fosler, this new career was almost as surprising as the decision which ended the self-described church lady's previous position.
There were six of us that were let go one morning when the church council had reviewed the budget, and it's like, uh-oh, we need to do something, we need to do something drastic, and we need to do something now.
Though Fosler had decided to seek employment outside the church, it still had a significant impact on her next move. Fosler recalls an exercise during a women's retreat where they were given magazines and a piece of tagboard.
And the directives were not to filter anything through your conscience, but to go through your subconscious. So to tap into that part that's sometimes unseen. And I was tearing pictures out of the magazine of women dancing and laughing. There's one image where it was a beautiful woman in a martini glass. Just, I went with it, I followed directions, I created my vision board.
Looking back, Fosler laughs at the foreshadowing. But at the time, Fosler was embarrassed to share her vision board with the group.
At the end, we gathered in a circle to share our vision boards. I didn't have my usual confidence and finesse. I kind of held it up, I looked at it, and I'm like, I don't know what this means, but it is what it is. And then I just kind of like said, pass.
Fosler didn't lose her job in church administration until 6 months after this retreat. But she discarded her vision board right away.
I kind of just put the vision board in my closet, and I did see it every day when I was looking for clothes. I didn't like look at it like, there's my vision board. I'm like, oh, there's that really weird vision board thing that I was embarrassed about.
Initially, the idea was easy to ignore. But when her friend invited her out to a fitness class, she had to confront the idea. And her fears.
Unbeknownst to me, it was a pole dance fitness class, and I was very intimidated, and I almost left. I was threatened, and I didn't feel adequate.
Show me the fireman. You ready? If you're new, you can watch. 3, 2, 1. Right, left, right. Wrap your left leg.
It was amazingly easy, and I found that I was strong enough to do most of the moves. It was very tasteful and very comfortable and very natural for myself and all the other new students that were there.
So Fossler cashed in her retirement, developed a website, and built a studio. On Valentine's Day, Fossler held an open house where she did a demonstration in front of about 200 women.
Secret is leaning forward. I know it's scary, but you can do it, and pushing off, okay? 3, 2, 1.
That same night, nearly 100 of those women pulled out their credit cards and signed up for class.
Financially, then, I have never had to look back.
In addition to other fitness classes, Lady Catherine Studios also hosts pole dance parties for birthday girls and bachelorettes. Between the Hudson and Eagan locations, Lady Catherine hosted 200 of these in 2012.
I had a couple friends who had gone to her open house in Hudson about 3 years ago. We all thought it would be fun that time, so we went back for a birthday party and had a little private party.
It was something I didn't tell people initially that I was doing. And then the better I got and the more fun I had, my parents think it's awesome. My mother-in-law, she almost bought me some shoes. And we have a pole at our house now.
Amanda and Annette have supportive friends and family. But not everyone in the community at large is open to pole dancing as a legitimate form of fitness. So, for the sake of privacy in the professional lives of this teacher and project manager, we left things on a first-name basis.
Well, I think, too, it goes back to our culture and the stereotypes there. And, you know, does this mean that I'm a stripper or that I'm a bad person?
I think Catherine's just mentioned it, too, is not think about the pole as something bad. The pole is a piece of fitness equipment.
Knowing the sensitive nature of her classes, Fossler tries to lift the stigma with humor.
Remember, I had my 62-year-old lady do this.
No problem.
Since 50 Shades of Grey has hit the shelves, people are slowly becoming more accepting of this idea. While others are busy making up their mind on the topic, Fossler keeps offering her fitness class with a touch of sass.
Step out.
For Culture Q, I'm Markita Fornoff.
You are listening to Culture Q's Obscenity Specialty Show, and tonight we are counting down the top 7 public radio porn topics. My name is Mitch, and I'm joined by
Matt.
And we're going to get right into the list. Number 7 is extreme weather.
It's been a very rough year for America with hurricanes and intense things that have happened, and radio just loves to blow that almost out of proportion.
Right. And of course, in Minnesota, we get about just about every kind of weather here, whether it's tornadoes in the summers or blizzards in the winter. If you follow public radio or just television news, really, people just love to hear about like this crazy weather that's going to come. And then we get like a dusting of snow, maybe.
We'll buy like loaves and loaves of bread just to like put in the freezer just in case there's no access to stores or electricity or anything. And it's always kind of fine. So.
Right, of course, you also get those crazy sound effects with extreme weather, and that is what's called a segue, because number 6 is the best soundbite. Sometimes public radio just likes to do story because the associated sound sounds cool.
And I'm the sources as well. Like, people love to have someone interesting, someone who kind of pretends to know what they're talking about, or actually knows what they're talking about, and really likes to just seem very intellectual and really applies their information to the listeners and other things as well. So, like, for example, with what you're talking about, if we ever needed to talk about anything, like, quintessentially Welsh, I suppose, we could go to you, and you would sound official just because of the voice. You have that great soundbite public radio voice.
I would cake it on as well. I'd be like, well, we're looking at the Wales, and it's a very interesting place, and it's got a lot of hills and dandelions and stuff. Yeah, I recommend it.
Well, there you go. Perfect for public radio. Number five on our list is the next biggest thing, whether that's technology or otherwise. If there's ever any new Apple product, public radio just goes crazy over it.
And e-readers and new computers and like the thinnest thing and the smallest thing and the fastest thing. And it gets very intense when it comes to that.
Yeah, it almost gets blown out of proportion certain times. Like I remember 3D TV, and then how many people actually own a 3D TV at this point?
Well, I mean, the 3DS is pretty good too. I mean, that's still around, and hopefully it'll stick around for a long time.
But even more than the next big thing, public radio loves to celebrate old things, whether it's breaking down Mad Men's fashion every single week. Like, what did the showrunner go with this time for Don Draper to wear? Like, what kind of tie did he wear?
I remember when we had cassettes and VCRs and all that kind of thing. And soon DVDs will add to that list. And then we'll look at, like, well, you know, Blu-ray's replacing the DVD, and I miss the DVD because it reminds me of an old times, and it's unnecessary. Just move on.
Number three on our list of top seven public radio porn topics is the government.
The government is a horrible thing, apparently, with corruption and the war and elections. People love elections. The coverage is intense. Like, everything that anyone has ever said is covered on public radio.
We should probably clarify, mostly we mean the U.S. government when we're talking about public radio.
Oh, yes.
Just because, I don't know, like, even if you talk about North Korea's government, we always tie it back, well, here's what we do here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they love talking about the government, whether it's the election, especially the election, or scandals is our number two topic.
Yep, absolutely. And, like, corporations as well, people who like outsourcing things and people who are like betraying the American trust, and people just love to eat that up.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, people just in general love scandals. Number one, though, on public radio's top seven porn items or items to consider porn is rankings.
Yes, like this, for example, the top seven radio porn things. Ironically, number one is rankings because everyone loves to see what the best thing is.
Well, no, I mean, at least we hope people like to hear rankings because that's what we're doing right now. Otherwise, you'd probably just been bored to tears. I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry for wasting your time in that case.
For Culture Q, I'm Mitch.
And I'm Matt.
Yeah. It's possible that what you know about the sex industry involves things like pornography, stripping, or human trafficking. But what you might not know is that the world of sex workers is often made up of very different people, professions, and situations. Reporter Jamie Nelson explores a lesser-known side of the industry. To ensure their security, those interviewed will be referred to by their aliases. I made a bet with the fellas, I'm scooping you. Got the number, now I'm thinking I'm the
smoothest dude, like I'm super smooth. I was a stupid dude. First word that comes to mind when you hear the word sex worker.
First word that comes to mind, sex worker. I don't know, for some reason, Pamela Anderson.
Red light, Roxanne, teenager, Lake Street.
The term sex worker is typically used to describe all types of work in the sex industry. Domination, providership, stripping, porn. And according to those who work in the industry, it's important to clarify the assumptions we may have about sex workers and how they feel about their work.
But there's like the Aurora Borealis.
Aurora works as an erotic dancer at Sex World.
I do live erotic peep shows. We sit in a glass booth with a phone, so it's safe and secure. And then the people that are visiting come and shut the doors behind them. Mostly it's like sitting and waiting for people to come in, but I sit and read, or if I have homework, I work on homework.
Aurora goes to school, likes her job, and her clients.
People have different preferences. Some people just want to watch a show. Some people want to sit and talk, and I like that aspect of it because I can, like, some people just have things that they're insecure about and they don't feel comfortable going up to like somebody with their weird fetish or like something that they think is weird, but it's really not. And it's nice to be encouraging and telling people that there's nothing wrong with them.
Most surprising about Aurora's job is her relationship to the clients.
Most of the men are really sweet and respectful and really grateful, like always thank you and are really appreciative. And really, like, in that situation too, it's like because I'm behind glass, like, and they're kind of exposed, they only have the doors between them and the rest of the store, like they're in the more vulnerable position and I'm more in control.
I also spoke with another sex worker we'll call Jane, who feels similarly about her work.
Right now I'm a sex worker, and that takes place and has taken place in a lot of different ways in my life, but currently I do providership. So kind of the lay of the land is, you know, you'll meet somebody, usually have a drink if they're, you know, if they drink, if not, you know, over water or whatever, you know, talk about their life. They usually have families, talk about their family and their job. And then kind of it leads to be, and usually it ends up being a pretty intimate time. So I would list the positives as self-determination, autonomy. I have, you know, I get to decide who I see or don't see. I can walk away at any time.
Like Aurora, Jane not only feels positive about certain aspects of her job, she also sees what she does as safer than other ways of hooking up and beneficial to others.
Dating can be really difficult. One-night stands, even if explained and even if consensual, one-night stand can get really complicated in some social life. And this is a position where people can go and there's a mutual exchange that is, it's a mutually understood exchange. And so I guess I would like to see, specific to sex work, society kind of open up its ideas about how humans can and should interact with each other.
Unlike places like New Zealand or Australia, where sex work is decriminalized, some forms of sex work in the United States are illegal, which means people like Jane have to be careful who they talk to for fear of being arrested, oftentimes leaving them without the help of doctors and even the help of authorities. Once a person is charged with this sort of crime, social mobility becomes difficult, which is frustrating for those who choose and enjoy doing this sort of work.
You know, I'm not ashamed of the work I do, and I tell most people what I do, but sometimes I can't tell people what I do because there are certain repercussions in society for doing this work.
Sex Workers Outreach Project, Chicago Chapter, is an organization made up of sex workers and allies and attempts to create a network of support for workers who don't have access to these kinds of things. I talked with an organizer from SWAP, Chicago. She goes by the name of Serpent.
Some people come in by choice, meaning they have other opportunities for other types of employment, but they find that they really like, they enjoy working in the sex industry, whatever it is they do.
Aurora and Jane represent just one part of the sex industry, and Serpent describes the way in which the industry is more varied than is normally understood. She breaks it down into three categories. There are those who choose to do the work, those who are coerced, and those who fall into it by circumstance. She argues that oftentimes these categories are confused for one another.
It's been very challenging for us to come out and say, hey, actually, even though there are instances of people being forced into the sex trade, that's not the whole truth. There are people who, yes, they enjoy this type of work, and then there are people who, you know, had a very bad experience as well. So we can't, it's important to understand that this is not a homogenous group of people.
The sex industry is hardly one thing at once. It's varied in terms of its workers, clients, and their reasons for participating in it. Serpent offers some perspective.
It's really important to listen to the stories of sex workers and kind of listen to a broad range of stories from sex workers, and kind of understand that everybody's experience is unique. Not one person is, you know, offering a fully comprehensive view of all sex work.
High heels. Red light. Roxanne.
This is Jamie Nelson for Culture Q.
You don't have to put on the red light.
Hey there, my name's Noel. I'm the host of Culture Q and a DJ at Radio K, and this is Soundscope. Minnesota is a place that gets really cold during the winter, and because of that, there are a lot of children born during the fall because people, you know, stay inside. So this is my mix for, let's call it keeping warm in the winter. Wildfire by Subtract would definitely have to kick it off. I don't know if you've seen the video for this song, but there is a girl floating above the sheets in a bed, and it's pretty intense. You just have to see it. If you wanted something a little bit more on the upbeat side, A Tribe Called Quest's track Hot Sex is definitely that song. It's on the Eddie Murphy Boomerang soundtrack. You can find it. It's the hook, Hot Sex on a Platter, is definitely, it gets the point across. Let's just say that. If you wanted to stick with that straightforward sort of idea, you could go with the track Music Is My Hot Hot Sex by Cansei de Ser Sexy, or CSS. You might know it from the iPod commercials, but it's definitely got a groove to it. Music is my girlfriend. Music is my daddy. Music's my imaginary friend. Music is my brother. Music is my great-granddaughter. Music is my sister. Music is my favorite mistress. For a bit of the Brit-style love, you can't go wrong with Pulp. The track Pencil Skirt from the Different Class record is definitely that. The lead singer Jarvis Cocker of Pulp has a sort of swarthy English sexy style to him, and you'll see what I'm talking about when you listen to the song. Finally, a bit of a new song that really snuck its way into this list just because it's definitely one of those earworm kind of things is I'm His Girl by Friends. This song's a bit more subtle. They don't come right out and say it really, but the groove and definitely the sort of vibe really get it across. So that's it. Those are 5 tracks to help you keep warm during the winter months. Thanks. True world traveler must never be afraid to leave behind the things they learned in school and get a little dirty. With this in mind, producer Amy Friedman discovers that when it comes to the language of romance, it's not just the sweet nothings that make you blush. I represent Queen,
she was raised out in Brooklyn. That's me giggling like a fool. Or as Gabriel Uvino would say,
non essere scemo, non essere scema. Shemo means a fool.
As I interviewed Uvino, my bursts of laughter were uncontrollable, immature, and slightly unprofessional. But I can't be blamed. Uvino's book, Dirty Italian, is not your average dictionary. It is filled solely with everything from the hippest to the slimiest Italian slang. Even Uvino admits that her book is, well...
This is just raunch. It's supposed to be offensive, or otherwise I wasn't doing my job. You know, that's what this book was supposed to carry, was all of the stuff that the other books weren't allowed to.
Her book gives you all the gritty details you need to know to be a real Italian. But this is not just an Italian thing. Slang is everywhere. Even Google Translate knows what's up.
What's up? Come va? Che passa? Shamashi.
Mah barca. Never neok.
Uvino's book reminds us that it's not only slang which is universal, but so is swearing.
You hit your finger with a hammer, you're going to swear. It's natural.
And usually, as you get to know a culture, the language starts to look more like Uvino's book and less like your college textbook.
If you're actually sincere about learning a language, then I think that's the best way to start.
In fact, Uvino believes so strongly in the importance of slang that she has even considered teaching a dirty Italian class. Still, some academics are skeptical. This is Carlotta Bauer from the University of Minnesota.
Probably not. Just a class at the university for dirty Italian, probably not. It doesn't seem the right place to... I mean, I don't think there is a... The university is a place for that.
But when I spoke to one university student about the idea, she seemed excited. I asked Maria Sciortino if she would ever take a class on dirty Italian.
Yeah, definitely. I think it'd be cool to learn. Like, especially if you were to travel there, then you'd immediately understand and be able to kind of, I guess you'd converse better with the locals, right? It makes you more relatable, I think.
It is no surprise that young people would be drawn in by slang. In a way, slang is the new generation's contribution to an evolving language.
It was really fun to talk to Italian teenagers and American teenagers and find out what they use and how and why these expressions evolved. So that's where you want to stay, you know, you want to stay young with a book like that. You can't go off into the sunset with your Dante. You got to stay right there on the edge.
My favorite take on slang came from another student, Marissa Di Pietrantonio. She wrote this. What is the fatal charm of Italy? What do we find there that can be found nowhere else? I believe it is a certain permission to be human. Maybe a moonbeam to light. So let's allow ourselves to be human for 1 second. Close your eyes and imagine yourself in Sicily, sipping cappuccino as you laugh at your friend because no matter how hard he tries, he will always be...
Un mamone. A mamone is just a mama's boy. And mamismo is the term that they've used. It's a concept that refers to, as I say, the tendency of unmarried adult male children to remain dependent on their mommies for most of their domestic needs.
Okay. Now you're lounging on a romantic beach with...
Say, ma che figo, o che fico, to describe a really cute guy. But if you use the word in the feminine, which can also mean a really cute girl, it can also mean the female genitalia, so you got to be careful.
You can laugh at that. I did. After all, we're only human. For Culture Q, I'm Amy Friedman.
That's all the time we have for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed our trip down Scandalous Lane, and maybe even learned something in the process. This week you heard from Marquita Fornoff, Mitch Skinner, Matt Curtis, Jamie Nelson, Noel Clark, and Amy Friedman. Producers for Culture Q are Mitch Skinner, Marquita Fornoff, Amy Friedman, and Matt Curtis. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek, and your host and managing editor is Noel Clark. You can find archives of our show on RadioK.org, and, as always, we'll see you next week. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.